Lowe's knows you take pride in every project. So take on what's next today with a free select Craftsman hedge trimmer or leaf blower when you buy a 20-volt push mower. That's a $119 value on reliable, high-performance Craftsman tools you trust. For the power to do it all, build, repair, restore, maintain, go with Craftsman. Available at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/21. While supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Tonight's video, we are starting off with a park ranger's experience in Yellowstone National Park and the horrifying sight that he witnesses while he is on watch. Then for our second story, this person is taking a hike in a nearby woods by his house, hops a fence where he's now trespassing, and encounters something unbelievable. Then for our last story, we have a couple of friends and a father go out on a camping trip in Arizona. And what happens to them while they're on this camping trip is horrifying. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. I would like to share my experience with you that I had while I was working in the state of Wyoming at the Yellowstone National Park, which is nearly a 3,500 square mile wilderness recreation area atop a volcanic hotspot. Now, this national park is not only in the state of Wyoming, but it mostly is in this state. The park spreads into parks of Montana and also Idaho. Yellowstone features dramatic canyons, alpine rivers, lush forests and hot springs and gushing geysers. And of course, you have to always include Old Faithful. It's home to hundreds of animal species, and predators too. Which leads me to my story tonight. While I was in the watchtower one evening, I had seen something so incredibly horrifying, so unbelievable, that even telling this tale to my friends and family, I almost feel ashamed. I almost feel like it's a fib that people just think I'm looking for attention, or that I had dreamt the whole thing. Or maybe I was high. Well, I don't make up stories. And I don't smoke weed or do any other types of drugs. Not that my job would even allow me to, even if I thought that I could get away with a drug test. What I had seen that night, that one particular evening, will forever haunt my dreams. I was on the tower, overlooking the vast wilderness around me. It was a beautiful autumn night. The sun had just set. You could still see the hint of pink and orange in the horizon, as the sun had just set. It was a beautiful darkening sky that you could finally see some stars that started to appear from above. It was almost a clear night, aside from a vast few strays of clouds. In this autumn night, it was chilly. I had my jacket on and my binoculars out, just doing what I do. When out of nowhere, in the clearing down below on the east side, is when I saw this deer, I assumed it was, running across the field chasing some other animal. Now, what that other animal was a smaller deer. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Maybe it was just a couple of deers, a family even, running across the clearing and disappearing into the tree line. But see, the thing that was being chased looked like a normal deer. But the thing that was gaining up on it from behind was not a deer. Not after I really watched. This thing was running bipedal on its back legs. It looked like a deer, but it had a more humanistic appearance. It was very skinny, frail even. It looked starving, and it looked like it had patches of skin that was missing off of its body. Its head looked like a deer. But yet it almost looked like a skull, too. It was so weird, and it's very hard for me to explain it, as I was only able to see this thing run across the clearing for a few seconds before disappearing. The thing had antlers and a deer head. Sure, it looked like a deer. But it was running like a man, and how frail it was, and how long its limbs were. The arms almost touched the ground. It was so creepy looking. Like something that you would see in some kind of horror movie. And I hate horror movies. It still feels unbelievable to this very day. Witnessing some kind of deformed deer man creature that's chasing another deer into the woods. But I swear, when it was running and chasing this other animal through the clearing, for a split second, I believe I heard it speak, moan, mumble. It was making some kind of sound. I don't know what it was, but it still gives me nightmares. There's something wrong with the deer. A few days ago, I was out for a morning hike in my local forest, on a trail I had walked 100 times before. It's a 5-mile loop that passed by a creek, and it was just isolated enough to feel like a refreshing sojourn away from the suburbs without being too remote. It was a bit of a surprise to me when I came across a fence about a mile into my walk, right across where the trail normally continued. There was a sign that said something along the lines of, "Government property, no trespassing," and I signed in annoyance. I had been down this very same trail nearly a week prior, and the fence and sign hadn't been there before. I almost turned around, but it was such a nice day, and the trail was so short. I figured it wouldn't be too big of a deal if I just hopped the fence and finished my hike. I could find another route the next time. I didn't see a security camera or anything else like that, so I simply hopped the fence and continued with my walk, annoyed that it may be the last time I would be able to hike on that trail. It's a beautiful area, and I stopped occasionally to listen to the birds or smell the fresh air. After about 2 miles or so, I reached the creek and decided to sit down and enjoy the view. As I took a swig from my thermos of hot tea, listening to the gentle burbling of the nearby stream, I had almost forgotten about the fence. Out in the forest like this, I felt like I was one with the sublimity of nature. Everything was quiet, calm, and serene. After a few minutes, though, I began to feel a little uneasy. It took me a moment to realize why. There were no birds singing. I hadn't noticed at first because the creek was so close by that it provided its own ambient noise. But once I was aware of the birds' absence, the silence was deafening. A couple of years back, I had an experience with a mountain lion. It was on a different trail, but it was the same general part of the state. I recalled that all the birds had gone quiet, instinctively silencing themselves in the presence of a beast. It had simply come down out of the bushes, walking across the trail before looking at me curiously. Luckily, I had managed to keep my wits about me, and succeeding in scaring off the cougar with the combination of yelling and flapping my jacket to make myself look bigger. As soon as it departed, the chirping of birds returned. After that day, I always carried a small air horn with me on my hikes. I reached into my bag and pulled out the air horn, looking around cautiously in search of anything that could be scaring off the birds. I didn't see anything, and was almost on the verge of simply pressing down on the air horn preemptively, when I heard a snap far away on my right. Turning cautiously, I strained my eyes to see what could have caused the noise. The air horn at the ready. Knowing what I do now, it is very possible that if I had chosen to use the horn, I wouldn't be here to tell my story. Though at first it blended in with the trees and brush, I noticed the deer rather quickly. I relaxed a little, exhaling in relief as I put the air horn back into my bag with shaking hands. I still felt uneasy though. Even at this distance, I could tell that there was something off about the animal, and the birds still hadn't returned. Staying quiet and lying low, I grabbed my binoculars and took a closer look at the distant deer. It was a buck, with a beautiful set of antlers. This already struck me as somewhat odd, as most of the bucks around here had long since shed their antlers at this point. Even odder, however, was the structure of the antlers. Rather than the two large antlers with multiple points facing upwards, it seemed more like 6 to 10 spikes extending out of the skull. On further inspection, the deer was malnourished, emaciated even, with clumps of fur missing. As I watched, it hobbled feebly on unsteady legs towards the river, lowering its head to drink. My thought was that it must have been suffering from chronic wasting disease, perhaps coupled with a bit of mange. I felt sorry for the animal, and with sadness, continued to watch it through my binoculars. Then its antlers twitched, which didn't look like they were going to fall off due to shedding or anything like that. The points moved outward slightly, like a hand unclenching from a fist. As soon as the antlers twitched, the deer stood up from its drink, eyes wide, almost as if it was standing at attention. As I watched, the now clearly articulated antlers further stretched, blending until the points touched the side of the buck's head. Then they began to push. As I watched in stunned horror, something ripped itself off of the deer's skull with a disgusting crack of splintering bone. The objects I previously thought to be antlers were, in actual fact, the spider-like legs of some sort of horrible monstrosity. My hands were shaking too much to get a clear view, but it was somewhat crab-like in appearance, with sharp mouth parts and beady black eyes. As soon as the creature pulled itself fully free from the skull, the deer's corpse fell down limply into the stream. Its bright red blood polluted the fresh water. The antler thing scuttled off rapidly into the tree line, disappearing in an instant. As soon as it was out of sight, I ran as fast as I could down the trail, not stopping until I had jumped over that dang fence and got into my car. When I finally arrived back home, I vomited on the side of the road. I called out of work for the next couple of days, claiming that I was feeling ill, which, to be fair, I was. I have no possible idea what that thing was. All I do know is that I won't be going on any hikes again anytime soon.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Camping trip near Tuba City, Arizona. Hello, my name is Matthew. Today I want to share a story of something that happened to me when I was in high school. About my sophomore year of high school, my best friend and her dad invited me to go on a camping trip in Arizona, northwest of Tuba to be specific. Her dad owned a cabin several miles off the highway that was close to some nice camping and fishing spots, and wanted to show us a good time. My best friend Kelly and I had been friends since fifth grade, and was someone I regarded to as a sister, especially because our parents were close friends. Her dad and my dad were best friends in high school, and both married mutual friends, so there was a sense of family growing up with Kelly. This year, for their camping trip, it was just going to be Kelly, her dad Ryan, and myself. We left home for the 6-hour drive and made it to the cabin just before sundown. Because of the approaching darkness, all we could do that day was make a fire and cook some dinner, so we could go to bed early for the next day's hike. That night, Ryan had told us all the trails he planned for us to backpack and camp at. Kelly and her dad were fairly experienced campers and would go on 2 to 3 week camping trips every summer. They had camped everywhere from the Rockies to the Appalachia. Every year, they would go alone, but this year was the first time they invited someone else to go with them, My dad wanted Ryan to take me because he thought it would do me some good. You see, a year ago, I had lost a close friend of mine in a hit and run. I sunk into a deep depression and basically disconnected from everyone in my life. My parents tried everything to help me, but still I suffered. Dad thought that if I went away and went on this camping trip, it would help clear my mind. I was happy to spend time with Kelly because she had always been there for me. Kelly and I often filter into different crowds and sometimes go weeks or months without really talking. But no matter how long we spent apart, we could always pick up where we left off. Her dad, Ryan, was almost like an uncle to me. He had been the one to let me see a movie my parents didn't approve of, or let me sip a beer every once in a while. He was someone I could truly go to if I ever needed help, so I knew that he genuinely wanted to help me on this camping trip. We finished dinner and talked until the fire died down to the glowing embers of what was left of it. With the light of the fire gone, it was the first time I'd ever looked up and seen the stars without the lights of the city obscuring them. It was also the first time I saw how dark the forest can get. Ryan said it was time for bed and handed each of us a flashlight. We followed him into the cabin where we would stay the night. The cabin was very rustic. It had no running water or electricity. Ryan shut the door of the cabin and hung a battery-powered lantern on the ceiling and told us our plan for the next day. We were going to hike about 8 miles to a campsite that he had picked out for us, and he said that we needed to go to bed because we'd have to leave as soon as dawn broke. The next morning, we woke up and Ryan and Kelly showed me how to pack my backpack, and we headed up the trail. After hiking up the trail for 4 hours, we finally reached the campsite. It was a beautiful lake surrounded by peaks on all sides. There was a flat area where we could set up the tent and make camp. We spent the whole day fishing and exploring the area around the campsite. It really was a therapeutic experience for me. My mind felt free of thoughts of the accident, and it felt like my depression was back home, and I could finally be myself again. Ryan taught me how to fish, and we even caught a few that we were able to cook that night. It was even warm enough that we could sleep outside the tent under the stars. It was one of the best days I'd had in over a year, and it was the last night of peace that I would ever have for a long time to come. The next day we packed up and we were going to move to the next campsite. But first, we had to return to the cabin as the trail to the next campsite crossed paths with the cabin. Ryan let us sleep in because the return trip was downhill and wouldn't take as long. When we got about halfway down, we encountered some berry bushes close to the trail that Kelly spotted and said were edible, so we spent a few minutes picking the berries. They were surprisingly sweet for being a wild berry, but still had a somewhat bitter aftertaste. After we spent a couple of minutes picking the berries, Ryan sat down his pack and said that he needed to take a leak. So he went only about 10 steps away and went behind a tree to relieve himself. As soon as he left our line of sight, something changed in the forest. Everything went still. No birds chirping, no wind. It was dead silent. Now you'd think that in a silent forest, you'd be able to hear the sound of a man's urine hitting the side of a tree from only a few feet away. But there was no sound to be heard. An eerie, almost primal sense passed over me. I knew that something was wrong. After a few minutes, Kelly called out for her dad, but there was no reply. We quickly wrapped around the tree, and Ryan was gone. Not only was the tree completely dry, but there was no footprints leading away from the tree, and no sign that Ryan had been standing there in the first place. At that point, I started to panic internally, and I started to yell Ryan's name to the forest, and Kelly started calling out, "Dad!" as loud as she could. I looked at Kelly and asked her, "What the F just happened?" At this point, Forrest returned to normal, but still Ryan was nowhere to be found. I picked up his backpack and left mine behind as he had more useful supplies than his. We spent the next several minutes looking around the area where he disappeared, but still could find no trace of him. I looked at Kelly and asked her, "What do we do?" And she says, "We have to get search and rescue up here as soon as possible." I said, But how? We don't have our cell phones. And even if we did, there's no signal out here. Kelly stopped to think for a moment, then she spoke with an idea. Dad's truck has a radio in it that we could use to call for help. If we get back to the cabin, we could use the truck radio to call for help. After deciding that it was best to try and get search and rescue, we started heading down the mountain as quickly as we can. But almost as if nature itself was trying to prevent us from getting help, the sky started pouring rain on us. Thunder and lightning rolled in as well as some hail. We stepped off the trail for a moment and used the tarp for a tent for a makeshift umbrella until the rain stops. It rained for a good 45 minutes, and as quickly as the rain came, the clouds were broken by sunlight. We took the tarp off us, and just ahead of us, there was a small clearing in the forest that was illuminated by beams of light shining between the clouds. We stand up and see a head of a deer coming out of the other side of the clearing. I looked over to Kelly to see a small smile grow on her face. After watching the deer for a few minutes, I noticed that Kelly's expression had gone pure white. She looked at me and said, "Matthew, what the F is wrong with those deer?" I took a second look and noticed that there was something off about the deer. I haven't spent as much time outdoors as Kelly has, but I had seen my fair share of deer living in Colorado. Something about those deer just moved different from the deer I've seen before. The way I can describe it is as if their movements lacked the grace that a deer typically had in their steps. These deer's movements were stiff and almost mechanical. Also, their eyes had colored iris and white sclera. Not like human eyes, but still something I had never seen in a deer before. Then Kelly said something to this day I will never forget. She said it without fear in her voice, but still the tone told me she was uneasy. Kelly looked at me and said, "The feet, Matthew." I looked at the feet of one of the deer and saw that the deer lacked the cloven hoofs that deer and elk usually have. Instead, what we were looking at looked canine feet. I realized in that moment that whatever these creatures were, they weren't deer. Almost as suddenly as I realized this, one of the deer looks up and looks me dead in the eyes. My fight or flight response was instantly triggered, and I grabbed Kelly's hand and pulled her with me as we ran as fast as we could away from the clearing until we got to a safe distance from the deer. I looked at Kelly and said, terrified and out of breath, "Those weren't deer, Kelly. I don't know what they were, but those weren't deer." Kelly looked back at me and said nothing for a minute. My whole life, Kelly had been my fearless friend. Her mother died giving birth to her, and her dad raised her alone. Ryan had taught his daughter to be strong and to never back down from a challenge. But in this moment, for the first time, I saw true fear in Kelly's eyes. She finally opened her mouth and said, "We need to leave." She starts down the trail faster than I can respond. I follow her, and I keep going on about the deer, but she wouldn't have it. We finally reached the cabin, and luckily Ryan left the keys to the truck on his bed. We called the Forest Service, and they picked us up and took us to their local headquarters. We told the ranger what had happened, and he said that Ryan must have gotten lost. We both looked at him, and Kelly says, "How can you get lost walking 10 steps to a tree?" The ranger brushed it off as the forest plays tricks on us and gives us some lecture on how easy it is to get lost in the forest. I tried to mention what happened with the deer, but Kelly kept changing the subject every time I tried, so eventually I gave up. The ranger launches a search for Ryan that lasted 2 weeks. My dad drove up and put us in a hotel for the duration of the search, and even volunteered to help the search. None of their efforts mattered, though, because after 2 weeks of a search, the Forest Service basically said there was no hope of finding him. The news was obviously devastating to everyone, as Ryan meant so much to all of us. He was my dad's best friend and Kelly's only parent. After we got back home, Kelly stayed with us for a few weeks until her grandparents eventually moved down to take care of her. A few months later, Kelly's grandparents got a call saying that they had found remains on a trail that matched Ryan. This crushed us even more to find out that what we had already suspected was indeed true. Ryan was dead. As terrible as the news it was also relieving to finally know the truth. Something that bothers me to this day about the discovery of his body is that his remains were found on a trail several miles away from the one he disappeared on. The Forest Service to this day still had not given a good answer to why Ryan's body was found so far away, and still had only given vague answers to the circumstances leading to the recovery. It's been over 10 years since this happened, and after all this, Kelly and I are celebrating a year of being married. Despite being so close to her, this is still a topic that we rarely discuss, and after 10 years, she still refuses to speak about the deer. I don't know what the hell happened to Ryan, but so far, no explanation has been able to satisfy me. I spoke to my dad a few years ago about the search he volunteered on. I waited so long because of how close he was to Ryan, and I didn't want to pour salt in an already open wound. He said that the search and rescue was really cagey about this one. Like you would tell that this was something that they were trying to brush under the rug. What perplexed my dad the most was that the rescue dogs couldn't pick up a scent, something that the handler said he had never seen them do before. How did Ryan's body end up on a different trail? Why was search and rescue so cagey about this case? What the hell were those deer? And why won't my wife speak about it? I still have no answers to give to these questions. Maybe someday the answers will be revealed to me. But for now, I'm going to be here for my wife Kelly. And if she ever is ready to talk about that day, I may post an update. Also, we'll post updates with any new info I find.